This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So we're going to talk some high school sports today. We're going to talk about spring sports. We'll also talk some golf. And then we'll wind up at the end of the show talking about the NFL draft coming up on Thursday. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. So let's start out with our good friend Jeff Kimmerly from the MHSAA and talk about some of the upcoming spring sports. Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
Sounds like you have a pretty full day planned.
Yeah, it is. It's always nice to like those full days. Keeps us all active.
Exactly. Plenty to talk about.
Yes. With the spring sports now, you know, one spring sports that I like that it gets a lot of coverage, more kids participate in it, and that's track and field.
That's your favorite one, I think.
Yes, and how is track and field in the Mid-Michigan area this year?
It's just getting going, to be honest. A lot of it gets going once spring break gets done, which, you know, happened a couple of weeks ago, and it comes on fast. The league meets are about a month away, but, you know, the Williamson teams are always very strong. Grand Ledge teams are always very strong. East Lansing's teams always very strong. And you know, that's one of those sports where they just keep building throughout a program, if that makes sense. And I'm sure you'll see a lot of those same ones this year. Although, you know, we had some surprises last year. We've had some very good Mason athletes of late. Oakmont has done very well. DeWitt has had some very good success lately too. So those are certainly among the many that you'll want to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, what in your opinion, do you see as the reason for, like, the schools like at Williamson, East Lansing, those schools seem to constantly have a bunch of kids going out? What are the reasons you're hearing why kids go out more so at certain schools than they do at other schools?
You know, I think part of it, you know, is winning. Winning keeps breeding more winning. It keeps breeding interest, of course. You know, I think you look at the coaches. I think you have some popular coaches at those places, and kids like running for them and competing for them. You know, I'm just scrolling through my mind of the people that are in charge of those programs, and some of the more popular coaches at those schools, I think. You know, and it's a sport where there really is an opportunity to do it for any athlete. It doesn't matter if you're fast or if you're strong, or, you know, maybe you just jump really well, or, you know, maybe you're a distance person. Maybe you can just go real fast for a couple spurts. There are so many different opportunities for so many different skills, and it can attract, you know, a variety of athletes, and that's part of the reason it's a great sport, especially at the high school level.
At the high school level, and because also they're weekly, you know, there's a meet every week, and that it gives you a chance to follow it. But once you get to college, boy, you hardly see any meets, hardly anything going on. But at the high school level, there's a week, there's always something going on. It's very exciting at the high school level, isn't it?
Well, you always have something going on within your league during the week, and then a lot of these teams run on the weekends too. And, you know, with especially we've been blessed with great weather this year, but the springs where there's a lot of rain, things really get smashed in. I mean, you figure out that that regionals are basically 3.5 weeks away, you know, at this point. If I'm thinking of this correctly, it might be 4.5. But even then, it's a pretty compact season because even, you know, you have regionals, you take a weekend off because of Memorial Day weekend. But, you know, you get right into finals right after that. Honor roll track meet for the Lansing teams is right in there as well. So it's pretty quick hitting, you know, but I think that's not a bad thing either. I think when you get to this point in the season, you kind of need something like that. So, or this point in the school year, I guess.
Yes, and it's really great because, you know, it generates so much excitement. We have so many kids that are out there doing it and participating in track and field. I guess that's one reason why I like it. Now, do you think this is one of those years where we might have some record setters because people have been outside working on whatever they do for so long? We might see some records this year?
Well, I mean, I think that's always the argument you can make. We were talking even just in the last hour about golf and how, you know, when you play golf in the spring, the boys have the spring season now, and they benefit from playing their finals in much nicer weather than the girls in the fall. But the fall was considered the advantageous season because whoever plays in the fall gets a chance to play all summer long, so their scores, you would assume, would be lower during their high school season. I think any extra time people get outside is going to benefit the performance, you know, just for the sheer fact of you're getting in more reps and better training probably. You know, it's not a ton of difference, but I think any little bit probably helps a little.
Yeah, what sports do you think that we don't hear, that they don't get that much publicity in the spring, has a chance just to break out? I think, tennis probably, and some of the other sports out there. Are there some other sports that people don't hear a lot about but have a chance to really break out?
Well, you know, I mean, the lacrosse people have kind of been talking about their sport being that sport the last few years. And, you know, in the last couple, we've finally, or at least locally, seen a little bit more interest in it. You know, for a while, it was basically Waverly, East Lansing, Holt, and Okemos. You know, now DeWitt has, you know, their own programs at the high school varsity level. Hazlett Williamson has had their own for a few years now. Ionia has at least a boys program, I believe. So I think, you know, I'm still not convinced that's going to be one of those sports that just takes the state by storm, or takes even mid-Michigan by storm. But there's certainly, you know, some growing interest there. I think golf in this community is big.
Yes.
You know, because Michigan State, there's been more interest in it on both the men's and women's side, I would say, over the last 5 or 6 years. And I think that trickles down to the high school level as well. And you had the Lansing Catholic girls in the fall who were, you know, incredible for the last 2 years. You know, maybe one of the better runs in MHSA history, really. And I think the boys, there's always a lot of interest there as well. You know, especially I think DeWitt's coming off 2 straight Division II championships and, you know, a few of these other powers that are around here.
Now, sports like golf, where you know some of the smaller schools really excel and do well, that's a sport where you don't really have to pay attention to what school, like their Class A school or Class B school. The school, the kids that are playing in the Class D and C schools, they can be just as good as those kids in those upper divisions.
Well, I mean, the scores don't lie. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at a sport like that where You have the same course, you have the same setup. It doesn't matter where you're from or what you're doing. If you shoot the low, you're shooting the low regardless. And you know, our finals rotate among sites every year, but it's always kind of cool to look back at some of the past years. And you know, I think we have them archived back to '96 or '97 for golf on the MHSA.com website. You can go back there and kind of compare, and you know, you can compare as to the course, because you could look and see where all these things were held, and you know, you can compare the Division IV from 1 year to the Division I from the other year. And yeah, you're going to see more low scores from something like a Division I just because the schools are bigger and there's more athletes to choose from. But there's nothing that says a Division IV athlete who comes out and shoots low isn't on par with everybody else, because it's the same course. There's no competition level they have to take into account there.
Yes, and when we look at that, especially, you know, at the levels, at those lower levels in golf, I mean, they really shoot out. I mean, that's the thing, because like that girl's team at Lansing Catholic, they just came on and they've been outstanding for the past 3 years or so?
Well, the past two especially. Mm-hmm. You know, winning Division III 2 seasons in a row, obviously a pretty big deal. And the scores that they shot, I'm trying to remember this fall what it was off the top of my head, but I know the score in 2010 was really incredible when you take the whole thing into consideration. And that's been a good program for a while. But they just happen to have a really good set of girls right now that have all played a ton and are very good. And they'll have most of them next year, too. And it's pretty impressive.
Yes, and when we look at all these spring sports, there are a lot of sports that gives the kids or young folks a chance to be active, whether it's running or doing some other things, or golf or tennis or whatever. There's a lot of sports that kids have a chance to choose from. I know you track how the sports improve every year. Is spring starting to jump up and maybe a few more people getting involved than has been in the past?
Obviously we don't know from this spring yet because you don't get that stuff until, you know, a little while after it's done. But as a whole, you know, Michigan has remained among the top for a long time now nationally. I think, and I'd have to go back here and look, but I know, you know, it's been top five quite a bit. In the years that I remember, and you know, there are definitely somewhere it goes up. There are always a couple there it goes down. It's pretty cyclical, but you know, there are opportunities right now in some sports that used to be very popular. But as people have shifted to say girls soccer and girls lacrosse, there is a lot of opening in softball for athletes that want to play that sport at some of these schools. You know, there's a lot of schools that used to be powers in that sport that struggle to have full varsity teams anymore. So there are always opportunities, and the popular ones cycle through, but there are a lot of chances to be involved and to participate and to have, you know, some great experiences out there in the spring.
Yeah. Do we see overall any sports having some major losses, or do most of the sports just maintain what they've been maintaining over the years?
I mean, a lot of them maintain. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, and again, it's something I would have to look up to tell you exactly, but I mean, softball has taken a bit of a hit of late. Yeah, as you know, you see girls lacrosse get a lot more popular. I think girls tennis actually grew quite a bit from what I remember researching some of this stuff last year. But you know, it's nothing where it's drastic, because each sport that we have has communities that make it a really big deal, and it's always going to be strong in those communities.
And that's for sure, because we've got a lot of great sports, and a lot of young people support our sports here in the Mid-Michigan area. You know, that's why we've been talking about, for as you know, Jeff, for the last few years, how great and how strong sports has been here in Mid-Michigan, because we've had such great participation over the years here in the Mid-Michigan area.
Well, and it's a great high school area. I mean, you look at the schools, and you know, they put a lot of resources into those things, and yeah, absolutely, it's something that's very popular around here. It's a college-based community, really, and you know, I think that also trickles down into it being a very strong high school community. Plus, I mean, it's a lot of, even our bigger cities are small towns, really. I mean, look at Holt; it's got the biggest school around here, but it's still got a lot of a small town feel, and I think that feel is the atmosphere you find, you know, in a school where a lot of people are participating in high school athletics.
Yeah, babe, Jeff, I want to thank you. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and good talking to you and getting off and talking about some of the spring sports. We'll probably see you out at a few places. I know we get around to some of the same events, so
yeah,
I'll look forward to seeing you somewhere out on the road.
All righty.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jeff.
Have a good one, Earl.
You
Take
too.
Care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's Jeff Kimmerly from the MHSAA talking high school sports right here on AM 870 WKAR. It's 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Egyptians elect a president next month for the first time since Arab Spring, and it is already a messy affair. Election officials banned nearly half of the candidates, including the top three contenders, who are promising they're not going to go quietly. I'm John Donvan. Egypt's difficult path toward democracy. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Scott Pohl. Today is going to be a windy and sunny day with a high in the mid-50s. Mostly clear skies with a low of 32 degrees tonight. Tomorrow, windy and sunny again, a few degrees warmer, the high 59. On Wednesday, we'll have a high of 60, partly sunny and maybe some rain.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Well, let's talk to our good friend Greg Johnson from over there in Grand Rapids. And he's going to talk a little bit of golf today with Greg and maybe even talk a little bit of Michigan State football. Greg, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you, Earl?
Okay. I know we haven't talked in a while, and I know you've been covering golf for a long time. So let's start out talking about some golf. The weather is turning, and especially in over in your area because the courses are really nice now. Usually sometime over mid Michigan, the courses don't really start thawing out and getting nice till around May and June. But this year, you're getting ready. I assume that more people are out on the golf courses now.
Oh, I think so. There was an early spring there, so I think people even made money in March, and they never make money in March. Sometimes they'll have good Aprils, but March, no one ever makes money in Michigan. But I think they did last March. So it's an early start to the season, and then when the Masters is on TV, everybody kind of kicks into the mood. I think everybody gets their clubs out of the basement, and Bubba Watson was a popular winner, so I think that fired people up. So yeah, it's golf season's kind of going. I actually played in Lansing on Friday over at Eagle Eye, and that's in great shape. Wonderful place. That's what a top notch facility. It's one of the best facilities in Michigan, and you're lucky to have it right in the Lansing area.
Yes, it is. I tell you, golf is really is it's amazing how popular it's getting. It's always been popular, but it seems like sometimes it seems like it's even getting more popular. It's hard to imagine, but it's such a popular sport, and so many people are playing, and more people are getting into it.
Well, I think in the last 10 years or so, the numbers have dropped a little bit, but I think it's starting to move again. It's an expensive sport, so I think when the economy suffers, it suffers. But Tiger Woods gets a lot of credit for bringing a lot of people to the game. He kind of opened the doors and got people interested. He made a lot of new golf fans, and then they in the process then tried the game because he was such a dynamic personality in the game. And he doubled purses. He did all kinds of things on the PGA Tour, and so I think golf owes him quite a bit. And there's a lot of negative about him, but golf owes him a ton too. So I kind of root for him to make a comeback and be a dominant golfer again, because I think it'll be good for the game overall, and just drives more people to the game.
Yes, that let me ask you that. Do you think that Tiger can come back anywhere? Just come back to be close. I mean, I'm not sure if he can ever come back to be the way he used to be, but can he just get back and be close? We saw him win at Bay Hill a few weeks ago, and then he fell off at the Masters. So what when you look at Tiger, what is your perspective on him?
Oh yeah, I think time's on his side. Golf, you can be really competitive until you're, 60. I mean, Hale Irwin kind of proved that. If you stay in shape and you he's still competitive. Tom Watson won the U.S. the senior PGA last year. He won a couple senior majors in the last few years, and he's 64 years old. I mean, he's still very competitive. Almost won the British Open a couple of years ago. Time's on your side, and then so I think Tiger's got plenty of time. I think Bubba Watson proves it's more about how the player plays and how things go for him that day and their creativity and stuff like that than it is the coach. I mean, Bubba Watson doesn't even have a coach, so maybe Tiger Woods has been a little overcoached. I think when Tiger just finds himself and maybe gets his putting stroke back a little bit, he was really good at Bay Hill that week. That's the kind of golf he can play, and that was a really strong field, so he'll win again, and he'll win majors again. I'm sure of it.
Okay. Give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870, WKAR, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Greg, do you think that Tiger, maybe he's going through too many changes? I mean, he's changed golf golf coaches so much. He's changing his swing and changing. Can a person, you think, maybe do too much to change how they've played the game? Because I keep saying, why doesn't he just go back and did what he did at the first of the year when he was very successful winning all those meets? Why Justin doesn't go back? I know he's got film of every round and every hole he's ever shot, but why doesn't he do that?
Well, I think, well, part of it, he can't go back to what he was 5-10 years ago because his body has changed, and he had the knee injuries, and he's got foot problems and Achilles problems. You know, so physically, I don't think he can make the kind of swings he used to make. He's had to change his swing, and I think he's still a work in progress on that with Sean Foley. I think they are changing his swing so it's less pressure on his knee and stuff like that. So he's kind of been forced to do some of that. Just, you know, it's like a baseball pitcher, you know, they start out with a really good fastball. Then when they lose a couple feet on their fastball, then they learn to throw a better sinker and a better changeup and things like that. So there's other ways to win golf tournaments, and I think he's in a process there. Nicklaus had, you know, a 6-7 year gaps where he wasn't really dominant during his career, and then he came back and was dominant again. So I think it's still possible. Golf has this amazing span of time. You know, a running back in the NFL gets about 5 years, but a golfer gets about 25 years. So that's a big difference. There's a, you know, he's got a chance to do, but yeah, there's some paralysis by analysis. That's kind of what the golfers call it. Like he's analyzed it too much, so now he's thinking too much. Some of it's just feel and natural and let his natural talent take over. And so maybe he does need to get back to that, but he'll find it. He'll stumble on it if he has to, you know, sooner or later, you know. I mean, I just think it's only a matter of time before he plays, you know, more weeks like he did at Bay Hill, where he putted well, he hit the ball well, you know, and he was dominant. And he'll do that again in a major. I just can't believe he won't. You know, maybe there's a mental thing going on there. I don't know. You know, it's impossible to get inside someone else's head. But you know, maybe he just needs to get his life in a little bit better order, and then the mental part will come too.
One thing I know is all these young golfers out there, they're not afraid. You know, it used to be, when Tiger went on the course, half the field would be scared of him. But now no one's afraid of him. The young golfers look forward to the challenge of playing him. And he's lost that fear, the fear that so many golfers used to have going against him, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he doesn't win it every week anymore. So yeah. And he doesn't have that you know he's better than you are when he tees it up against you. There's not any of that anymore, and there's so many guys now who can hit it farther than he can, and, you know, that's just the way the game has evolved. But, you know, it was like that with Nicklaus when he first came out, too. He hit it way past everyone, and then people caught up, and, you know, and then there was Trevino and Gary Player, and other people emerged, you know, and it's like Rory McIlroy, and there's players from around the world, and Luke Donald, and guys that have great golf games, and so there's a lot of competition, and probably even more competition than there was during Nicklaus's era, and people don't really give him credit for that. But you know, it is what it is. You know, if you win once in a while in golf, you're a great champion. It's just Tiger got everyone so used to him being, you know, 7 or 8 wins a year. I mean, that was he was remarkable there for a while, and you know, that's why he's right up there with the all-time winning already. You know, and he's still really a relatively young man at 35. He's gonna golf really well for at least 10 more years. So you know, as long as he stays healthy. So you know, there's time.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Because that's the main thing with him. He's had so many injuries over the years. That's probably just hurt his game somewhat. He's had so many injuries. If he can stay healthy, I think he can get back. But you know, we're just gonna have to wait and see because he's been so inconsistent. So it's hard to say how good or how much can he make it back because he's just been so inconsistent.
That's true. And you can't be inconsistent in golf. At least you can be inconsistent once in a while, and you're never going to have 10 great weeks in a row. But for a week, you have to put it together. And,
yes,
you know, for a stretch, you need to put it together to really do well. You know, and here's the thing. He hasn't really played well in the last year since coming back and stuff. And yet he's still one of the leading money winners. He's 8th in the world. It's, you know, he's playing bad and he's still 8th in the world. I mean, wait a minute. You know, he's let's not get carried away here. He's still a really good player. He's just not what he was before.
Yes, that is so true. Hey, Greg, you know, we can talk a little bit about spring football. Michigan State spring game comes up next week, next Saturday afternoon, and you going to come down for that one?
You know, I may. I'm kind of looking at it as a fan this spring because I'm not working for a newspaper this spring and covering the team like I have the last few years. So it's kind of a little bit different. I read everybody else and kind of listen to what everybody else says on radio and stuff. And it's fun. I think they're going to have a great defense. I really think that the defense at the end of last year was tremendous. And those, you know, almost everybody's back and they're, you know, and it's. And some of the young guys that were coming last year are now going to play a lot more, and I think they're only going to make him faster and stronger and better. And so I think the defense is really going to be exciting, and then we'll see what happens with the offense. I kind of have a feeling they'll be a little more conservative. They'll be a run-first kind of defense this year, offense a little bit more this year just because they don't have the experienced quarterback. But I really think the quarterbacks they have in camp are capable. So, you know, I think it could be another great year. I mean, I think D'Antonio has made them one of the elite programs in the Big Ten, and I think they're there to stay for a while.
Yes, I guess the only question is, you know, with Andrew Maxwell being hurt, we won't get a chance to see him. He's going to probably be the new quarterback this fall. It would be nice just to get a look at him during the spring before the fall. But you know, we may not get to see him until the first game of the season.
Yeah, the main thing is he's got to get himself healthy right now. You know, I don't think a spring game, that's just like that's more like a glorified practice. It's not the same thing as a real game. And Maxwell's going to have to grow up when he gets in the real games. You know, that's real game experience. There's nothing like that. There's nothing that even compares to it, no matter what you do in practice. So once he gets in the real games, we'll find out a lot more about him. We'll find out if he can lead. We'll find out if he can make big throws on third down. We'll find out the things you have to know about a starting quarterback. You know, we'll find out if they have to just give the ball to Le'Veon Bell 20 times a game. You know, we'll find out a lot of things once the real games start. But the potential's there. I think the offensive line could be better. I think the running backs are going to be better. You know, we'll see about the wide receivers. They're going to be young, but there seems to be a lot of talent there. So,
yes.
So I really think it's a very talented team. And so if the quarterback play is good, you know, they can be a good team. If it's great, they can be a great team.
Well, let's hope it turns out to be a great team, that's for sure, because, you know, it was a great year last year. The last couple of years have been very, very good. Let's hope it still continues for Michigan State. You know, Michigan's coming back now, so and I know you've got a ton of fans over on that side of the state who follow Michigan, and it looks like Michigan is going to be pretty strong again this year too, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're going to be, you know, that program, you know, always gets great athletes. They attract great athletes. They sign good recruiting classes. It may take them a couple of years to get to the talent level they were at, but I don't think the covers were bare when Rich Rod was ousted anyway. I think they were about ready to start winning games anyway, his way. But, you know, they're going to be fine. They're always going to be great. They're always going to have a great program because they put the money to it and they put the effort to it, and they're going to have good coaches. So that's going to happen, but that doesn't mean Michigan State can't be. You know, it doesn't mean there's only going to be one good team in the state or one good team in the Big Ten. You know, they can. I think it's going to be just an even better rivalry, and it's going to be a serious game every time. And instead of just being the in-state game, it's going to mean the Big Ten half the time. It's going to mean a chance in the Big Ten game. You know, it's going to be that kind of game for maybe a long time, because I don't think D'Antonio's going anywhere, and I don't think Michigan's going anywhere.
Yes, I look at it. The recruiting should be really fierce in these coming years. You've with Ohio State and their recruiting tools, and even with Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, there's going to be some fierce recruiting for the athletes here in the mid-Michigan area, in the Midwest, that is. So, you know, it's going to be interesting just to see how it all fares out. I mean, you know, Coach D'Antonio has been able to get some of the players that fall underneath the radar screen and turn them into a strong Division I type A players. Hey, do you think he'll still keep doing that?
Oh, sure. I think he'll still get a share. I think he's made an effort to go to Pennsylvania and to Florida and to some other Georgia and some other states in the last couple of years. And I think if you win bowl games, you do those kind of things, then you get a little more notice in the other states. So you have a little bit – you can broaden your spectrum in recruiting. And but yeah, it's going to be brutal recruiting in Ohio, you know, where he's got a lot of his players the last few years, because Urban Meyer's there and he's going to try to shut down the state. But there's no way Urban Meyer can get any more players than the previous coach did, because that guy did a great job. Trestle was a wonderful recruiter down there too. So, and he locked up the state and got his pick. You know, there's plenty of players in Ohio, so they'll still get players from Ohio. There's plenty of players in Pennsylvania. There's plenty of players in Michigan, and they're going to all go after them. And, you know, a little bit of it will be, it's how you develop players too. You can go get the greatest high school players in the country, but then you got to develop and make them better through their careers. And I think that a sound program with coaches, that there's coaching continuity, like Michigan State has developed, that's where your best bet. That's when the players, you get the good player and you make them better. You know, they went out and they got Will Golston a couple of years, and they've made him a couple of years ago, and they've made him better. I mean, now he's going to be a dominant player. I mean, I think everybody in the country knows that's going to happen. And he's improved each year. He's gotten stronger. He's gotten faster. You know, that's development. That you get the great player and then you develop them. So they just need to continue to do that, get their share, get good kids that turn into great kids, get walk-ons and turn into starters. You continue with the same formula.
Well, let's hope that Michigan State does. I think I'm like you, man. I think they'll stay on that level. They're very strong. They've been developing a lot of very good players. A lot of the players that are underneath the radar, you know, they might be, you know, like people say, two or three star players, and then they develop into four and five star players. They've had quite a few players that have developed into some very good players, and even some of the walk-ons, as you know, Greg, has developed quite handily here at Michigan State.
Oh, yeah. I'd be stunned if they do fall off very much. I mean, they, you know, because of an inexperienced quarterback this year, they could lose a few games, you know, that because inexperience plays a factor, but I think they have some other things to overcome that. I really expect them to be in the hunt for the Big Ten title. I mean, I think that's where they've put the program, and I think they're there to stay for a while. I'll be surprised if they fell off from that. Like if 4 weeks into the Big Ten schedule, we're thinking they're not in it anymore. I don't think that's going to happen anymore. I think they're going to be right in there till the last few weeks, no matter what.
Yeah, when you look at the overall impact of the league, what teams do you see? Any teams that we haven't talked much about over the last couple of years, maybe surprising and just say coming out of nowhere and become a pretty good contender?
Well, I think Ohio State probably still has the best talent, you know, on their campus. So I think with Urban Meyer's offense and some of that stuff and the way they coach defense, look out. I think they'll be very good. And I think Iowa's still going to be really strong. You know, they've had some good recruiting classes. I think Penn State's probably not going anywhere. I'm sure they're damaged by what's happened and the change to Joe Pa. But you know, there's kids in Pennsylvania still growing up, still dreaming about playing for Penn State, and they're awfully good football players. So I still think that'll be a really tough program. You know, Michigan's going to be really good. And Wisconsin has proven over the last few years to be the cream of the Big Ten. I mean, they really are a great, great team. And I don't think that's stopping anytime soon. You know, they're going out and getting another quarterback. They're going to look out for Wisconsin. You know, I really think the Big Ten's one of the stronger football conferences, and I think it's going to stay that way.
Okay. The time, 39 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. And, Greg, hey, I want to thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll have you back on again sometime and talk some more sports with you.
Sure. I'll keep watching. Thanks, Earl.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Hey, good talking with you. Bye-bye. It's 39 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
This is John Donvan. In the week ahead on Talk of the Nation, The Great Divergence. Timothy Noah tells us why we cannot ignore the growing income gap. Plus, the conflicts that arise when schools rely on parents to pay for supplies and salaries. All that and much more. And Neil Conan will be back in the coming week on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Windy today, sunny too, the high 55 degrees. Overnight, we're expecting mostly clear skies with a low of 32 degrees. Tomorrow, a little bit warmer with a high of 59, sunny and windy again. Partly sunny Wednesday and maybe some rain with a high of 60. I'm Scott Pohl.
Hey, give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll free, 877-952-7870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, you know, on Thursday, the NFL draft starts, a three-day event, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And we'll be looking at the NFL draft coming up. What will the Lions do in the draft coming up? Do they draft a cornerback, which is one that a lot of people say they need, or an offensive lineman? Or how far do you think they'll go in before they draft a running back? Because they may need a running back as well. Well, let's talk with our good friend Dave Burkett, who covers the Lions for the Detroit Free Press. Dave, how you doing, my man?
Good, Earl. How you doing?
Okay. Yeah, you think it's going to be probably still a cornerback be first for the Lions?
Well, I think, if one was there that they like, that's obviously the route that they'll go. You know, and then, I mean, I think that comes down to if Drake Fitzpatrick is there. Stephon Gilmore's another guy who could be there, but it looks like he'll be the second cornerback off the board and could go in that top, 15 picks right now. So if Drake Fitzpatrick, the Alabama corner, is there at 23, I'd fully expect the Lions to take him. I don't think they'll reach for that position early on. That's not really Martin Mayhew's M.O., I could see them maybe moving up a couple spots, but by and large, I think it's best player available if Kirkpatrick's not there, and that might be a defensive end, it might be an offensive lineman, it might be somebody that we don't expect that slides.
Yes, that thing, because drafting at 23rd, could you see, people project that maybe even Darrell Worthy could be there. Could that be possibly a first-round pick for them?
I don't see Worthy as a fit for the Lions. I think there's been some questions about his consistency, and the Lions have gone defensive tackle the last 2 years early in round one. I think defensive end is probably a little bit better of a possibility for the Lions. In fact, I gave him Illinois defensive end Whitney Merciless in my mock draft the other day, Earl. I just think, I had both those cornerbacks that I mentioned earlier off the board, and I think when you look at the Lions' long-term situation at defensive end, Cliff A. rolls in a little bit of a contract dispute as a franchise player right now. Kyle Vandenbosch is going to turn 34. Lawrence Jackson's a free agent after the season. I think it makes sense for the Lions to add to that position, even though this season it should be a position of strength.
Okay. Now, what about when people always say they're going to take the best player available? Do you still look at position, or what do you look at when you hear, because we always hear GM saying, we'll just take the best player available. But they have to have some kind of rationale for that supposedly best player if the players they really want are gone.
Yeah, well, I think there's two things. First, you're talking about best player at biggest position of need. There's never, GMs don't necessarily, or teams don't necessarily rank guys 1 through 32 and then make sure they take 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 in that order, or go strictly by that order. They tier them up early, So there may be 4 or 5 guys with relatively the same grade when the Lions are on the board. And if they feel just as highly about, let's say, a cornerback, if they have a cornerback that has the similar grade to a wide receiver, well, cornerback's a bigger need, so they're obviously going to go cornerback. I think you want impact positions, you want players at impact positions right there. And what you want really out of the draft, especially your first couple rounds, Earl, is you want somebody that you can figure being a starter for the next 8 to 10 years. So it doesn't necessarily mean that guy has to start day one as a rookie, but if you can see him being a 10-year starter in the NFL, then you're doing your job in the draft.
Okay. We got a caller for you, Dave. It's Tom from Lansing, and he has a question for you about Kirk Cousins. Tom, how you doing?
Hi, Dave. I'm just wondering where you might project Kirk Cousins going in the draft.
Looks pretty solidly like he's going to be a day two guy. I think when you get past that, obviously Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin are going early, and Tannehill should be a top, 10 or 15 pick, 10 or 12 pick probably. There'll probably be another quarterback that sneaks into the end of that first round, and I think Cousins is right in that next group that comes off the board. He might go second round, they go third round. Doubt he gets past day two. There's a lot of teams that are looking for quarterbacks, and Kirk's a guy that obviously does well in the boardroom, has a winning personality. Guys, there's no red flags with his character or anything like that. And I think from talking to some teams and people across the NFL, when you look at a guy like that, they can project him, 2 or 3 years down the road being a starter in the league.
Yeah, I kind of thought he might go early third, late second. I think depending if Seattle wanted to go after him or not.
Yes, guys. Seattle, Denver's a possibility. They're going to need somebody to take over for Peyton Manning before too long. You know, I think there's a lot of teams out there. You look at all these teams in the draft. You know, if the Dolphins don't get a quarterback early, they're going to need somebody. Cleveland, they're going to need somebody. So, some of these, it's going to shake out. Obviously, Indy and Washington are going to get their guys. You know, the Dolphins or the Seahawks or the Chiefs or somebody's going to take Ryan Tannehill, and then somebody could trade up for a guy like a Brandon Weeden or something like that. But I think Cousins is probably the next guy that comes off the board.
Well, thank you, Dave. I think Kirk has to put a little weight on him. So we'll talk to you later.
Okay, thank you.
And Earl, that's kind of, well, you know, if you can get a guy in the second round, third round that you look and you project 2-3 years down the road as being an NFL starter, I think that's a win in the draft, and that's why you don't. It's tough to give draft grades out early on.
Yeah. Now, how much do you see what they pay these guys? Draft, we know the quarterbacks, and because of the new CBA, everybody's going to be making less money, which, of course, that makes it easier for owners. They like that. But how much do you see, like, a first-round pick going down? We know there won't be any more contracts like Stafford, will there?
No. I mean, I think we're talking, I'd have to look the numbers up, but it's, you know, low 20 millions was a first round pick last year. Cam Newton, 22, 25 million, somewhere in that neighborhood. Can't remember off the top of my head. And Andrew Luck should be right in about the same boat. So you contrast that, Matt Stafford, he got 41 million guaranteed, 68 million total. Over the life of his, or 70, I'm sorry, 68 was Sue, 70 couple million total over the life of Stafford's deal. So you think of how drastically different that is from just a couple of years ago. And I think that's why you're going to see teams, even if it's not this year, you're going to see teams that are willing to move into the top 10, are willing to take chances on guys like that because the money is a whole lot less cumbersome if things go wrong.
Okay. Well, let's go out to, got a caller for you from John from Holt. John, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing today? I have a question about Edwin Baker and Keith Nichol. What are their draft statuses, both those guys?
I wouldn't see Keith Nichol getting drafted at this point. He's probably a guy that gets into camp. You know, rookie camps will be the week or the second week of May for a lot of teams, and he'll probably have to fight for a job. But Baker's a guy that got a little bit of rumble to him. You know, these last couple weeks. I mean, he's a guy that I would think goes day three. You know, probably fifth, sixth round, somewhere in that range. But he's going to have a shot to make a team. The way that NFL offenses are these days, you're not looking for a feature back necessarily. You just need a guy that can play a role. And I think Edwin Baker's that guy. You know, he ran well at Michigan State's pro day. He doesn't have a lot of wear in his tires, so he's going to get a look, and he should be on a team next year.
I think Keith Nichol could be an excellent special team player with his speed and athleticism.
And that's how a lot of those guys have to make the team. You know, I mean, I think just from talking to Keith Handy, a guy that the Lions brought in the other week for a visit, cornerback safety from West Virginia. We're talking about his visit, and he said what the Lions told him was, hey, wherever you go, even if it's not us, what you need to do to stick is fall in love with the special teams coach. And I think that's what happens with a lot of these guys late. That's how you get your. That's how you carve out a role early on in your career, and that keeps you around to be able to develop so you can maybe get a role, you know, a full-time starting job 2 or 3 years down the line.
You know, I think, too, with Keith, that people have to remember he's only been a receiver for a couple of years with some NFL coaching. He could become a very excellent receiver in the league.
Yeah, you know, I guess that remains to be seen. I wouldn't expect that he's going to get drafted. I know he's got some athletic ability, but, you know, I think there's a lot more polished guys, the guys that offer a lot more specific roles, slot guys or speed guys or whatever the case may be. But, you know, he should get in the camp, and from there you got an opportunity.
All right, thanks for taking my call. You have a great day. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John. What about, we haven't mentioned much offensive line. We know the Lions definitely need an offensive lineman. What do you think they'll do if they have to go offensive line in the first round or second round?
Yeah, well, Earl, you know what I did? In the paper Sunday, I laid out, you know, five players. Basically, Martin Mayhew had said there's between four and seven guys that they'd feel real comfortable drafting at that pick number 23. And obviously, if one of those cornerbacks is there, they're going to be the pick. If not, you know, I threw two defensive linemen and two offensive linemen that I think are in the mix. You know, Whitney Merciless from Illinois, who I ultimately had him drafting. Chandler Jones from Syracuse, who I had going a couple picks earlier. And then two offensive linemen, Cordy Glenn out of Georgia and Jonathan Martin out of Stanford. I think Cordy's, he's a guy that fits a little bit more what they're looking for. Big body, can play multiple positions, moves pretty well. where Jonathan Martin, you know, he's going to need a year to develop. He's got to get stronger. But I think you can project down the road as a left tackle sort of guy that might be able to take over for Jeff Backus. So the Lions are definitely going to need to address that position. If they don't do it in the first round, I'd expect them to later on. You know, under Mayhew, they haven't historically taken linemen early. They've taken guys in the fourth round and in the seventh round twice under Martin. So they're going to draft somebody. It's just a matter of where. And this draft right here is pretty deep in interior linemen. At least that's how the Lions view it. So I think, I'm leaning myself towards when I do my mocks and things that I'm hearing, it sounds like defense is a real possibility in that first round. But I would expect them to take a lineman at some point early on.
Okay, now what about a running back? How soon do you think they'll take a running back? Because, as you know, they've had a lot of problems with running backs recently.
Yeah, Martin's a guy that values that position. You know, even in the way the NFL has changed and it's become so much more of a passing league. I mean, I think they do address the position. Look, Javon Best is working out a little bit. Mikel Wisher's coming back from that Achilles. But they spent high draft picks on those guys the last 2 years, first and second round. So they want to be more balanced, Earl, and they need to get a running back at some point early. I wouldn't expect it to be in the first round, you know, maybe not even the second. But I could see it. I could see it happening on day two. You know, if not on day two, you know, maybe round four or five, something like that. I fully expect them to draft somebody at that position this year, throw them into the mix and beef up that competition.
Yeah, now, do you like the way the NFL has changed the draft now with first round on Thursday, then the second round on Friday, and then going on to the third rounds and round three and everything like that? Do you like the new draft system they've put together?
You know what? It's a lot more difficult on deadline from a personal perspective, that's for sure. I just wrote a little web update for Freep.com on Nate Burleson and his recollections of his draft day. And he said, you know, they had told him anywhere from late one to the fourth round. And so, of course, he was thinking round one. And I remember back in those days, I think the first few rounds were all on Saturday. So he was there all day Saturday. And, man, I can only think back to then if the Lions would have had their first round pick go on that Saturday morning, how much easier it'd be to write a nice glowing story on that guy. But I think, look, it's the way the league is now. All this stuff is in prime time because it sells. I mean, we're talking about it right now. You know, people want to see it, and they can sell the advertising for it. So it's just one of those necessities of life.
Yes. Now, with we talked about offensive linemen and running back. Running back is still key, even though you know the Lions were third from the bottom in the NFL as far as rushing yardage. So they definitely need to have a better running game, don't they?
Well, you know, they led the league in pass attempts, and I think just for Matthew Stafford's sake, you know, you want to take a little bit of the pressure off him. If you have a running game, even some complementary pieces like Best and LeSure were supposed to be, you know, that allows the offense to do a little bit more out there, and you don't want Stafford taking hits. He's just 24. You want to minimize some of the impacts that he takes on a football field on Sundays. So if you can add to the balance of that offense, if you can get a guy that maybe fits into that mix and can be insurance for Best if he has another concussion, I think you got to go that route just for the sake of the offense, because this is a high-powered offense and the Lions want to keep it that way for years to come.
Okay. Now, you know, do you think or are they pretty well set with receivers, or could they use one more receiver?
No, look, and I'll tell you what, I'll give you two Michigan State names that I know the Lions are interested in a little bit. Keyshawn Martin. They spent a little bit of time with him. He's obviously a guy that has some return skills too, and the Lions are looking for a fourth receiver, maybe a guy that can handle some punt returns, and he's the guy that would fit that mix. You know, he can play a slot in the NFL, and he can, you know, he's a guy who gets big yards after the catch. So he should come off somewhere in the middle rounds, and I think the Lions are definitely a possibility for him. And then Trenton Robinson's another guy, Earl. Obviously, safety. And I think it's not a great safety class, and so he's not going to go, you know, super high. But middle rounds again, if you look fourth, fifth round, you know, somewhere in that area, he's a guy that the Lions might consider. Jim Schwartz spent some time with him down at the Senior Bowl. I think met with him twice for about 45 minutes each time. They had their safeties coach at Michigan State's Pro Day, so the Lions have shown some definite interest in him too.
Well, that would be good for the Lions and be good for him. It'd be nice if fellow Spartans around here wouldn't mind going down if they got one or two on their roster. May just travel down to see him in a game. You know, that's one thing. When I talk to so many fans, Dave, so many fans, they they're such college fans, and I've had a lot of them tell me they don't follow the kids once they get to the next level, and I always find that hard to believe. You follow them all the way up through college, but then you don't follow them if they make it to the pro level. Do you ever hear much of that? People are saying that they don't follow them anymore just because they're a pro receiver or pro back or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, I definitely found that to be the case a little bit when I was covering, you know, colleges, both Michigan and Michigan State. I don't think it's so much, that people stop caring about them. I think it's just a matter of time, real man. You know how it is. You only have so much time for family and work and fun. And frankly, you know, you're, for a lot of people, it comes down to if you're a college fan or a pro fan, you know, and maybe you invest your Saturdays in the Michigan State or Michigan or whoever the case may be. And you don't have a lot of time then on Sunday to follow the Lions or follow your favorite players wherever they go to. And the same is true. On the flip side, you know, a lot of people follow the Lions and maybe don't quite get into football as much on Saturdays because they got family commitments or little kids sporting events or whatever. But I think there's always some interest, and you always take pride in watching guys from the team that you follow or the school that you went to do well in the NFL. So you can have bragging rights over whoever sits next to you in the office come Monday.
Yeah, have you seen the fact that maybe some of these guys, the guys that went to Wayne State or Grand Valley or Saginaw Valley, any of those guys that been mentioned, any of those guys on those teams been mentioned about possibly a late round draft pick?
Wayne State had one guy go to the combine this year, Jeremy Jones, a safety who, you know, late round potential, priority undrafted free agent type. Safety, a little bit undersized, but he's a real good player. It was real productive at Wayne State. I think he had about 18 career interceptions, so he's got a nose for the ball. Jake Long's brother, Joe, also played at Wayne State. He won the Division II award for best lineman, so he's got a shot to be drafted again. You know, late round guy, potential undrafted free agent. And then there's one other kind of small school guy from the state, Chris Greenwood, cornerback from Albion, who's well thought of, and he should go somewhere in the middle rounds, you know, 4, 5, 6, somewhere in that area. Big cornerback from Detroit who's got a chance to make a team.
Yeah, what do you see when you talk about linemen? And I know when I've gone to say some games from Albion, went to some of those games before. What do you see about linemen? Because you see so many 300-pound linemen, and I see 300-pound linemen at schools like Albion and Hillsdale and such. What's the difference between those 300-pound linemen and those that are in Division I that are draft eligible?
I think the footwork, you know, the movement skills. You know, I think for the most part, the better athletes of the big men are at the major colleges. You can find a 300-pound guy plenty of places, plenty of corners around the country, but not all of them can move like some of these NFL linemen do. I mean, it's really, you know, when you watch a guy like, you know, even Dominic Raiola, who people think is undersized, I mean, the guy still weighs 290 pounds,
yeah.
Close to 300. He moves pretty well, and if you look at him, you know, it's not like he's got a flabby body or anything. I mean, that's the case with a lot of these linemen. You know, when you're looking at an NFL guy, Cordy Glenn, who I mentioned earlier, 350 pounds, just a massive, massive man. Met him in the airport on the way to the combine, and he's a huge human being, but he can move. You know, he had one of the better 10-yard splits of linemen at the combine, and I think when NFL teams are looking at that, if they want a guard that can get out and pull, if they want a tackle who can leak outside, I mean, that's what they need in order to combat the speed on defenses these days.
Boy, that's amazing. I mean, to get in a guy like that big and can move, I see some of those 40 times, and some of those linemen run some very, very good 40 times.
Hey, you think about it, 5 seconds for a guy who weighs, 310 pounds.
Yes.
I mean, that's cooking. You know, that 5 seconds, I consider myself in pretty good shape. I don't even know if I could run a 5-second flat 40 these days. And for a guy who's 300-plus pounds to be doing that, it's pretty impressive.
Yep. Hey, Jeff, Dave, I want to thank you for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And I know we probably won't talk to you again before the draft, but we'll talk to you after the draft and get your take on what the Lions do.
All right, Earl. Sounds good. Okay. Talk to you.
Thank you. Yep. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Dave Burkett from the Detroit Free Press talking about the Detroit Lions coming up in the draft coming up Thursday. I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for calling. Invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. You're listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening.
From NPR News in Washington.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.